Welcome back to Channel 9 Live. We're actually live, so they can't bleep anything we say at this point. That'll teach them to invite us. So we have a crazy awesome panel of people today. Hey, which camera am I supposed to look at? That one? Okay. I kept looking at that one. See, this is going to be very informal, as you guys can tell. We have an awesome panel today, and we're going to talk about a very dirty four-letter word, HTML. Well, HTML5, depending on how you look at it. And I have four really cool people that I want to quickly introduce, and then we can get the conversation rolling. Last minute addition, but last but not the least, Jeff Croft right at the end there. JeffCroft.com, works at NGenWorks. If you are on the web, you probably know him. He needs no introduction. We're not allowed to swear on this, so
okay.
You should totally swear.
I will not swear.
We should totally swear.
I can't. I'll get fired, but
yeah.
You totally should.
All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Right next to Jeff, we have Stephanie Sullivan, who...
Ruiz.
Stephanie Sullivan Ruiz, correction right away, which is a Lewis with an R. It's a tongue twister, actually, for a guy like me who's an expat. Stephanie is... What's the best way to describe you? You're a front-end dev who teaches standards. You've been doing standards for, like, a decade, right?
Right.
I knew you back in the Adobe days, where I actually saw you as the face of Adobe to Wasp.
Right.
So you guys can, you know, Bing it or Google it or ding-dong it or whatever you do. You can. Everyone's on the internet, right? So I'm not going to spend too much more time introducing us. Robbie Ingebretson, you're kind of like a lighter shade of me. That's how I look at you. Because you're a designer, developer, everything in between. You kind of traverse the spectrum of stuff. You have this wonderful little company, Pixel Lab, and is it nerdplusart.com?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Wow, I can't believe I remember all of this. I can barely remember a name when I wake up. And finally, we have Emily Lewis, self-proclaimed standardista, but more importantly, someone who loves profanities. I'm riling
swearing.
This up because I want it to happen.
I want to be invited back.
Emily is probably best known for her work with microformats, and she has a fantastic book out on microformats that anyone who's ever has ever been interested in microformats has probably read. So let's stop the intros there and let's get into the dirty details of HTML5. I'm not going to moderate, so to speak. We're going to wing this. I want you guys to forget that the camera is here, and let's have a conversation about it. What I will do is I'm going to call BS every time we get marketing-y. I want this to be a real conversation about HTML5, so let's talk about the real stuff. So why HTML5? That's the title of this panel. Jump in. Why should we care about HTML5? Why is this big buzzword haunting us all the time?
Well, to me, we should care because it's the evolution of the language. It's the evolution of the markup language that we use. It has a lot of related web stack technologies, and CSS3 that gets lumped into the HTML5 marketing term. But HTML5 itself is simply web applications and web form standards married together, and then, you know, progressing our HTML language. So it gives us a richer semantics, a lot more things we can do just inherently in the browser.
But why is that important? Like, why can't we just build a site and I was advised not to turn this into a Flash versus Silverlight versus HTML5 thing, but...
I think we should have that conversation.
And if we swear while we're explaining that, that's okay.
It's totally okay. So my experience, and I used to teach a few years ago at Purdue University, was people like to self-select and go. They either like to call themselves Flash developers,
right,
or Silverlight developers, or you name your favorite technology, or standards people, which always seemed kind of unintuitive to me.
To me, any of that is just boxing yourself into a corner. Like, if you decide you are a Flash developer, or even if you decide you're an HTML developer, I think you're basically locking yourself in. You're saying, this is what I do. It's you know, I think I see this also with like agencies that say, oh, like we're a maybe like we're an expression engine agency.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's great right now, but in 3 years, who knows if expression engine will still be popular? I think you're just boxing yourself in. So, I mean, to me, and my talk here is sort of along these lines, but we really all have to think of ourselves as just web designers and developers, or not even just web, but digital product designers and developers, and be open to whatever technologies that may encounter. And I mean, right now, clearly HTML5, it does seem to be the future of, at least the immediate future of the web, the next, you know, several years.
I think that along those lines, I think that as a developer, you need to give yourself more credit, too. Like, a lot of times we sort of self-define ourselves that way. Even if we don't, you know, we're not public about it, we sort of go big on something, learn a particular tool. And I think that actually you would be surprised at how easily those skills transfer. So,
a lot of times... Talk a little about that.
Well, so a lot of times, I mean, we've been doing a lot of... So I'm a Silverlight guy, right? We've been in the last year, though, doing a bunch of HTML5 work, and I've actually been amazed at how easily just... some of the thinking that we do. I mean, a lot of what you're doing as a UI developer is you're sort of mastering the... Well, first of all, you're mastering the way people interact with something, right? Like mouse capture, for instance, right? It's something that sort of belongs across all platforms, and you have to understand how it works, and then it just works across all platforms. But then there's something even more fundamental, which is, I think, you kind of learn how to construct something, right? You learn how to build things out of layers, and you learn how to put something together. A lot of that knowledge kind of transfers as you move across platforms.
Yep.
And fundamentally, that's the thing that is making you valuable as a front-end developer. It's not, you know, a particular syntax or a particular framework.
So my sense is HTML5, and I'm not talking about the spec, but I'm talking about just the canopy term that we've been using for the future of the web. It seems like it's making a lot of those things converge. Like, when you start thinking about Canvas, for instance, right? And I know, like, few of us actually do Canvas-based development. But it always, like, it seems ironic that we call it Canvas-based development, because to me, Canvas is just this little block on your page that is more powerful. Mm. So it seems like what you guys are saying especially becomes important with HTML5, because now the entire page, it almost seems like HTML5 is what we've learned over 10 years through a lot of different technologies and plugins and a lot of different experiences.
Well, I mean, that's what the goal of the spec writers were trying to reach, to take what we have been doing for years and put it all together. Even something on the more basic level with the semantics, just choosing the new semantic elements for defining page structure is borrowing from how we were naming things for years and years and years.
So. The paving the cow path, I think, is the phrase that they use, right?
Yep.
So I forgot to do this earlier, but you can actually tweet your questions to @Channel9Live and hashtag them as #CH9Live. If you guys don't ask us questions, we're just going to talk. So consider yourself served.
Boring.
I doubt that. So I have five different trains of thought going on in my mind, so I'm going to stop stuttering, and I'm going to first focus on you, Emily. So I see you as someone who's always evangelized this notion of the web exists, and we've developed these ways to do things. Why not take those ways and apply that to something else? Like, to me, microformats is a classic example of people started doing things a certain way. They started writing classes, and, you know, attaching classes to their divs and stuff. How do you think that changes? Does any of that evolve? Does that change? How does it affect microformats, for instance?
Well, I mean, HTML5 doesn't adversely affect microformats. You can still write microformats in HTML5 and apply it to even the new semantic elements that are recognized by all parsers. But then HTML5 introduces its own sort of semantic vocabulary with microdata. Instead of using a class attribute to apply a value to describe content, it's using, you know, like your item prop attribute, which is new in HTML5. It doesn't have broad adoption yet. There aren't a lot of tools that are reading it, and there aren't a lot of people that are writing it. But, I mean, if that's the direction that things go to describe content for more semantic meaning on the web, then I'll stop using microformats and I'll go in that direction.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to be in a box.
Yeah.
You know? Totally. I don't want my clients' projects to be stuck.
But it's, like, you know, as you were saying, everything that you've been doing with microformats is setting you up to be successful that way too. So I mean, it's all just an evolution, and that's the thing. It's like, if Emily walked around saying, I do microformats, and that's what I do, yeah. She would be stuck in a box, but she's not like that.
So you're all freelancers, right, at some level? I mean, is that right or wrong?
Yeah. At the heart.
At the heart.
Yeah, I work almost full-time with EngineWorks now, but I still do some freelance work as well.
Okay. So, or freelancers, or you have agencies or your own little companies.
Yeah, right.
How's business with, are you starting to see an uptake on, I remember when I worked for an agency, we would have people who would come in and just say, hey, we want this thing done in Flash, or we want this site built in
Web
HTML.
2.0.
We want it built in Web 2.0.
You know, I think at EngineWorks, we almost consider that a red flag, not even just Flash, but anytime a client comes to us and say, we want something built like this, we sort of consider that a red flag and say, I'm not sure, like we would rather have clients who say, this is the problem we have, or this is the goal we have, and let us, trust us to make the decisions on how it should be built or what the, but we do get some of that, and if they're otherwise...
Have you guys started rolling out, HTML5 sites?
Yeah, we have. I mean, we definitely have. It's, we haven't got into some of the... some Canvas and a few of these things as much yet, but I mean, as far as having the doc type and using the semantic elements and using as much of CSS3 as we can and that sort of thing, definitely.
I just heard you say, Emily, that that's all I've been doing now.
Yeah, I haven't done a non-HTML5 site based on the doc type and the semantic elements since I went freelance almost a year ago.
Interesting.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah, I've been using it probably about a year. It hurts nothing to put the doc type in, and based on the client, it just depends on how much of the other elements that I can bring in.
So you progressively bring in stuff based on the audience.
Yeah,
and the client.
I do a lot of work for agencies that sometimes agencies tend to be very Flash heavy, and now with iOS not supporting Flash, I will have agencies come and say, okay, we've created this, but we want you to create the same thing in HTML for accessibility reasons or, for iOS reasons. And when I do that, in HTML5. I don't even ask, But the funny thing is, I just recently, and I don't think I can talk about it yet, but because it's not live, but there's a large
microsite. You have to swear.
I have to swear. I have children, gosh. There's a large microsite I just coded in HTML5, all the semantics, and it's really a cool site. And they just sent me the gold master, go through it on their server. And what they did was they dumped my HTML5 site into their XHTML CMS, and they put 278 lines of code before my 75 for my document.
I saw you tweet about that.
You saw me. Yeah, if you follow me, you saw this. I just was, 20 lines of JavaScript we're not using. And, so it... I guess you can say it's good to check with the client and find out how they're going to deploy your content. But other than that, I build everything in HTML5.
So what kind of stuff are you guys using today in production?
So we're seeing a huge uptake in people who want to do HTML5, literally for experience. We've done a couple of games. We did Agent 8-Ball.
Yep, that was awesome.
Where we were building things that literally you couldn't have built without HTML5. And we're having other clients come to us. And then one of the interesting problems that we're solving...
Can you say why you couldn't have built it?
Well, so Agent 8-Ball uses Canvas for all of the... Literally all of the rendering is in Canvas. Actually, a lot... this is interesting, actually. I think that there's an interesting thing happening where a lot of times, like you mentioned, when we talk about HTML5, we're talking about maybe a spirit of a generation or something, right? Yeah. It's bigger than a spec. And so we'll deploy something like Agent 8-Ball, which uses Canvas sort of for a lot of the core rendering. And then there's... sort of this layer of jQuery and this layer of whatever transparent pings or something like that that are sort of embody what's actually happened over the last 3 or 4 years and are sort of independent of HTML5, and yet people sort of see those as being HTML5.
Yeah.
But anyway, so people are coming to us asking for experiences that that we can build because of sort of the progression of the technology that we wouldn't have necessarily been able to.
So I think this segues really well to to a question that we just got in through Twitter from Disco Rax. If you can just scroll down a little bit on that tweet. And I almost recognize this person from Mix Online. What's the benefit of HTML5 if different browsers rendered them differently? Do you think this
standard?
Standard UX is more valuable than the standard compliant rendering. So I think, I mean, this is a very loaded question.
Well, yeah, but for years, different browsers have been rendering things differently. This is not a new concept. This is
Well, it's a new concept if you, and I don't know this person, but if you are coming from the world of Flash or Silverlight development or something like that. But Emily's right. I mean, in general, this has always been the way that web standards-based development has been, and that's just sort of something that you have to learn to accept and even embrace is, like, this is part of what makes the web great, is that you are building UIs that will be different from browser to browser and device to device, and the goal isn't to have everything look exactly the same or act exactly the same, but rather just to work well everywhere.
Yeah, provide a great experience and conform to the device or the browser or whatever it is that you're looking at.
And that's why we need to be using tools like Modernizer. You know, I use it in every project because it gives me, it feature tests, it tells me, you know, or feeds back. And then you can use a JavaScript library like YepNote to load the scripts you need to create the compliance in browsers that don't yet have it. And I think people, right now, we've got to use polyfills and shims for certain things.
Yeah.
The other thing we need to remember is not everything needs to be exact.
Yeah.
You know, the experience, I always tell people the content needs to be there for everyone, but the experience with that content does not have to be exact.
Yeah, it seems like we learned as a community over the last decade that things don't need to look exactly the same.
Yeah, but because a lot of people don't believe that still.
Yeah, it's still a hard sell to clients, but at least in the web community, we, I think, for the most part, have kind of embraced that idea.
So coming from a client background where I was doing WPF and Silverlight, this was a concern that I had jumping in, and I have to say I've sort of been pleasantly surprised by how much this actually isn't an issue. So it kind of seems like there's sort of this layer of, you know, the web that's been around for 10 years, and you sort of supplement, like, whatever difficulty there may be there related to, you know, standards and compliance and stuff with, like, this incredible community that has, you know, the web's so collaborative, so you have things like jQuery and you have, you know, Modernizer, you have all these projects that sort of give you this layer that makes it really easy to sort of navigate some of that.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is we're getting really, really good at building parsers and browsers that are actually very, very similar.
Oh,
the test suite, you know, over the last 10 years, we've gotten way better at this. Microsoft just submitted, I think, like, you know, several hundred tests to the W3C. Even there was some controversy around that, but I think still, like, an awesome kind of display of sort of how the community is actually solving that problem for us. And then also the new stuff, like with Canvas, audio has been a little hard, but Canvas in particular, we haven't had issues. It just works. Like, very, very few issues across different browsers.
And the Canvas spec is pretty simple, right? It's a nice short spec.
Well, I was just going to say, there's no doubt that, I mean, today we are, with the browser sort of compatibility and the quirks between browsers, if you're talking about the latest version of browsers, are very few and far between. It's not a big issue anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you still have to deal with older browsers, and that can be a little bit of an issue, but, I mean, you know, there was a time, not all that long ago, when there were certain browsers that we just, you know, wanted to kick in the teeth because it was like, what are you, you know, come on, get with the program. But that's not, I mean, everybody is with the program. Everybody is with the program now, so it's not really,
right.
Right.
Yeah. So let's actually talk about, I did too, wanted to kick certain browsers in the teeth. So. what are you guys excited about? Like, is there, if you had to pick one thing that you worked with that's new, what is it? And I'll throw my first one out there, and we can talk about it later. If it's one of your favorites, mine is WAF. Like, I love that we have typography, and I know you would. I knew you would take that and run with it.
Yeah, go to my talk today.
So let's start with you, Jeff.
I was just going to say typography in general. You know, just I feel like typography is finally getting its due credit on the web, and that's really exciting. So I think, you know, there's several. Parts to that, but I mean, yeah.
I have a side note on that, but I'll save it for later.
Okay.
Steph?
For me, I think what I'm enjoying the most in development right now is playing with CSS3.
Yeah.
You know, just really being able to cut out images, greatly reduce HTTP requests.
Totally.
And I'm playing a lot with generated content, which isn't CSS3, but now that browsers are, you know, advancing and IE6 is on crutches and kind of out the door. I don't have to worry so much about it. I think we're resurrecting some of the things that we couldn't quite do with CSS2. So
yeah.
I'm playing a lot with generated content and using CSS3 on it and cutting my markup down. I'm a super duper like into clean markup,
yeah,
as little as possible. So that's been really good for my development.
Yeah, totally.
I know I keep going back to this, and by the way, high five on typography. Super excited about that. But to avoid sort of the obvious, I'll say Canvas.
Yeah.
I saw this. I saw a demo this guy did where he was reading pixels from a video, performing transforms on them, so making them black and white, and then writing them to a canvas in real time. That blew my mind. Like the fact that you could, with JavaScript, so the fact that you could do that, and it worked in every browser I tried it on, with like barely any, if any, performance degradation. So when I look at that, like I kind of feel like you are paving the way for, you know, this layer of like framework awesomeness that can be built on top of that. I think we're a year or two out, maybe not. I would love to be surprised and excited by that, but you know, I think, but what you're going to see built on top of that, I think, is just going
to
be incredible.
It's stuff we used to be able to do only with plugins, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and you can do it natively to use the term.
You have this rendering stack that is, you know, in many cases hardware accelerated, that, you know, essentially gives you this playground that I think will be really exciting.
Totally.
Well, I'm a dork for semantics, so I just like that new direction. Not just that HTML5 gives us more for our semantic arsenal, but that more applications and tools are being developed that utilize semantic information to make our lives better, give us better information. You know, search engines taking advantage of it to provide more relevant search results is just one thing that I think is pretty great.
Yeah, and to riff off semantics, and then I'll come back to that side note that I had. It's kind of, did you watch the Jeopardy with Watson?
Oh my God, it was incredible.
Right?
I was like, wow, if we could just find a way to define
to
all of
the
content
web.
On the web, then machines can just understand us.
So right. So for those of you who didn't watch it, and for viewers who are tuning in, basically IBM came up with their second supercomputer, and this one was Watson. The first one beat the chess grandmaster.
Right.
This one beat Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter, who won Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. Like, they were undefeated champions.
Right.
What was interesting, though, is when Ken Jennings wrote this article about it, and you should go search for it. It's an awesome article, because he wrote about, it was called My Puny Little Brain, but he wrote about how he was beaten by this computer, and when he finally talked to the scientists, it seemed like the computer was thinking just like him. And that whole section was just about semantics.
Mm-hmm.
It was that the computer had context about every piece of content on the page.
It could start understanding,
and it could understand
our natural language.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, no, I think that's, I was hoping that's, sorry to put you on the spot, but I was hoping you guys covered everything that I would have loved for us to talk about. Go ahead, Steph.
I just have one side note on the Canvas thing, because I think Canvas is super sexy, and you know, I think it's pretty easy for developers to pick up. You know,
it's,
if you know JavaScript, you can just dive in and
get
your context going. But I have issues with it being used for mission-critical things where accessibility is an issue, because I'm a big accessibility advocate. And, you know, I really like when I see, like, charts that the data is in the page, but then Canvas draws the bar chart, or, you know, and the data can be changing and Canvas can be changing. That's cool to me, because the data can be accessed by assistive technology and other ways. But I'm concerned when we start using Canvas for everything and not thinking about the fact that we are drawing something that can't be accessed.
Well, this is the same. I mean, that had the same problem with Flash for a long time, right?
Right.
And it got better.
Yeah.
And I think it probably will do the same. I mean,
or
like
video
realistically,
or something.
It'll get better.
Yeah, if you think of Canvas as being, you know, like a media element in that sense, like it's a place where you can display interesting content, but you're right, it needs to be either decorated or somehow you need to, you know, provide that information in the context
in another
that
way,
anybody
right.
can get it.
But I do know for a fact, because I know a lot of people in the, you know, accessibility community, they are heavily looking at it right now. How can we do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
And trying to get it into the spec, but it isn't there yet.
Yep.
So I think people need to be aware of what they're using Canvas for.
And it's exactly what you said, Jeff. I mean, you could rat hole on an entire panel about this, and the only time I get into Flash versus Silverlight versus HTML5 conversations is this very topic. The problem that I always thought that the plugins had was they were black boxes in the browser, right? And they just blocked everything on that page around it was blocked out. Mm. So accessibility, anything that you wanted to do that was a good deed, so to speak, right, would be good practice, was tougher to do. So I'm hoping it's going to be a lot simpler with Canvas because the DOM is just exposed, right? Mm. We can actually touch the Canvas very easily from the surrounding code.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think it will be in the long term. I mean, I think you're right that there are, it's not maybe not there yet. There's things that still need to be done, but I think in the long term it will be easier and to keep it accessible.
So let's take another question from Twitter.
Cool.
This one is from Sprite XP. How and when do you learn or keep up with new technologies?
I'll tell you, my answer to that is whenever somebody pays me to.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
No, but it's sort of true. I know myself well enough to know that I'm not going to learn anything because I want to. I've been wanting to learn iOS development for like 3 years. I still can't write an iPhone app. And the reason is because I've never needed to. And so I always try to find a reason why I need to do something.
So
you know, like, so if I want to learn about Canvas, I'll try to, you know, find how can I work some Canvas thing into this project that I'm getting paid to do, and I can bill it to somebody else and learn the thing.
So let's assume you do have the project now
that
you've always wanted. How do you guys keep up? I mean, it's the web, and it's just there's no one answer, but what do you guys do?
I'm still a feed reader. I still go through my feed once a week, and I pay attention on Twitter. There's a app I use called Later Stars. You can favorite a tweet, and it saves it if there's a link you want to reference. One of my favorite things, and I don't always get paid for it, but my favorite way of learning is I like to write, and so I agree to write, and I write about topics that I may not have an actual project in. Or
then you have to research.
Kind of the same deal. You're forcing yourself to need to learn it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're saying everyone should start blogging, too, maybe, or
Yeah, well, that's how
it.
I got my book deal. I started blogging about something I was interested in. So.
I do in some ways think it's a little harder to keep up today because of Twitter killing the blog star. I love Twitter, but it really has reduced. Like 4 or 5 years ago, there were so many great blogs writing about stuff and web stuff, and I feel like it's a little harder to kind of keep track of it, keep up with everything in a way.
It is true, but I will say I don't use an RSS reader because of Twitter.
As long as you can keep up, I
follow people that I know stay on top of things, and you know I glance through. If I don't have time to read, I just glance through. I didn't know there was an app for it. I just star it. So my favorites are basically all things that I need to
read.
You
need to read later.
Yeah, mine too.
And then I go back when I have time and I read, and I have so many bookmarks, there's no point in even looking for them anymore.
Yeah.
But I just found out in the last couple of weeks, I noticed when I search on Google, or maybe Bing does it too, I don't know. But
I told you could swear, and you did.
when I search in Google now, it's showing me my things from my favorites at the top.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, yes, I don't have to go back and look through those.
Yep, yep.
So really, but I'm with Jeff. I mean, it is so hard to keep up right now because everything is advancing in the JavaScript, the CSS, the HTML5, mobile. I mean, every direction is moving so fast.
Yeah.
Even when I give a talk, a month later, if I give the same talk, I have to go through the entire deck and update whatever's changed, because it does.
Yeah, I wish our doctors did this too, right? Like kept up with the medical reading.
Very true.
I think the bottom line for keeping up with web development is identifying the people who are doing the great stuff in the field that you... And
right.
I mean, that, I don't know how you do that. I mean, maybe that might be a little tricky, but like... You know, if you know that, you know, like, if you want to do JavaScript, you should probably be following Joe Hewitt or, you know, whatever.
And I'll tell you how you find the other people then. You raid their Twitter list.
Yeah,
you go
that's
through
true.
Who is Joe Hewitt following.
Right.
And then you look at who those people are. That's how I found lots of good people.
Yeah.
Along those lines, another thing is I think you need to be strategic in where you spend your time right now, because there is so much. It's just, you know, it's like a shotgun of great stuff. And so... I think to be effective, you need to decide, you know, kind of make a decision on the bet you're going to take, and then allow yourself to go deep there.
Right.
And then I think actually a lot of the learning that you do kind of happens by osmosis if you kind of have the discipline to be strategic and allow yourself to go deep, you know, in a thing.
So to echo what all of you said, I think I'm going to borrow something from, it was in Jason Santamaria's talk, which ties back to the type, so maybe we'll segue back to type. But he was at an event apart, and I thought he had the best piece of advice for people who were getting into typography. He had this little visualization where it was a big circle and this little circle inside it. And the big circle denoted everything you could possibly know about typography. Mm-hmm. And the little circle was everything that you need to know to get by.
Right. That's awesome.
And then he superimposed the Death Star on it because it looked totally like the Death Star. But I think that applies to us too, is you don't need to know everything. Mm-hmm. Right. I think you need to know exactly what makes you get paid or what makes you get by or...
or makes you happy too.
I mean,
you should like follow your natural curiosity. Yep. I think is
what
the rule.
What your passion
that,
is about.
Yeah.
Yep.
So okay, since we're back on typography, I'm going to come back and maybe we can rat hole about this. So do you think that the web's going to end up looking like MySpace did for a long time because we have native type?
I think we can use any font
we ever want.
There could be a period of extreme badness. I mean, it happened in desktop publishing.
Yeah.
It could happen, but it will grow out of it. I mean, it's just, you know, when the web was new, we had animated GIFs of flames and
blinks.
Shit stuff like that. And so,
well played.
You know, it'll get better. But yeah. But I think that there could be a period of
Yeah,
well,
I was wondering about
that. If you can, you should. You know, there will be drop shadows everywhere.
Well, I'm starting to get worried because, like, now I'm starting to see, and I think it's good, right? But I'm starting to see articles about how do you mix and match typefaces. Here are the top five ways to do it. And I'm always kind of afraid of lists because what lists do is they condense a very complicated topic and then people start parading around with that. But you're probably right. Probably an extreme phase of badness is to ensue.
Well, I think one thing that might help to rein that in is people that put five different typefaces on a page are going to suffer the consequences of either downloading all those font files or linking on, you know, whatever service they use, and it will slow down their page.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anyone should use more than a couple, you know, font faces on a page, or you can get into trouble.
Yeah, well, and at some point, the clients are going to be like, that's ugly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we have...
they don't know.
We've evolved.
Well, I'll say...
Over time, I think, not everyone, there's just a lot more appreciation for good design in everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it on billboards even.
Well, I don't think, just to clarify what I said, I don't really think the working web designers are going to be the ones that cause the
marketing people.
I don't think they're going to be the ones that cause the extreme phase of badness. It's going to be marketing people and people building their own personal sites and mom and mom and pop shops that are building their own website for their store or whatever.
Right.
Those are because they don't really have a design background.
Well, and picking up on that, like we keep saying, like the web is so collaborative that, you know, a whole lot of like the design tasks that used to be very much an individual thing, we're able to get, you know, from templates now, and you know, a lot of times that person is actually just going to Template Monster,
sure,
or going to ThemeForest or something like
that's
that.
That's true.
Where you actually are benefiting from sort of the, you know, the smarts and the expertise of a really good designer.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think that we are discovering fonts like we were in the desktop, you know, publishing
era. That's true.
So, to a certain extent, like they have some allure on the web, but the actual form of a letter, I think people have a kind of more sophisticated appreciation of it. So I think we'll see proliferation of fonts, but you know, we're not going to see the craziness we saw with Print Shop or whatever.
Okay,
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
I'm doing a site in Comic Sans.
Is it about comics?
That's what we've sworn
that
we'd be
saying. That might make it acceptable. Maybe.
They're semantic comics.
This is true. I was watching Andy Clark's session, and like that felt like semantic animation, right? If you saw it at AEA, the mad animation stuff.
Yeah.
So completely open now. I'm excited to be alive right now, but because I've just, I don't know. I feel like it feels like it felt 10 years ago, right? And when the web was kind of getting big. And right now, it kind of feels that way. Is that how you guys are feeling? I feel a camaraderie with like the people who are involved in it. I feel excited. There's so many new things coming out each day, which again can be a fire hose, but it's so nice. But how do you guys feel about our industry right now?
I definitely agree about just the excitement of new stuff. I mean, there was a period for quite a while where I was just frustrated with like, there's never anything new, and it was because there were browsers that were still in really wide use that we had to, you know, pander to.
Yep.
But I definitely feel excited about it. There's just a lot of new stuff to play with, try out, new toys, new shiny stuff.
Yeah. It
I'm definitely excited, but I think I'm also exhausted.
You did a workshop yesterday.
Yeah, so at this moment. Yeah.
And well, you might be a little hungover.
Well, no.
We're in Vegas, by the way, for
those of
you. I was
bed early. Maybe tomorrow. No, but I do front-end development, you know, for agencies a lot, but I also go into companies and train their web departments on these new technologies.
Yep.
That's the part that gets exhausting, is just making sure that I am really up to the, you know, up to the letter on where we're at. And if it were only for my own personal use, it would be easier, you know, you push yourself. But yeah. I think the training portion, it can get a little exhausting. I love it, and so, I'm definitely excited.
So maybe a little bit of advice is think about how you scope things and bite off what you can chew.
Yeah. Right, right.
I think the thing that makes me most excited about this moment in time is that I see like this like learning from our mistakes that's been happening as a community. Where so I've been preparing this typography talk. Something that got me really excited, as you mentioned, was the WAF format, and not because maybe not. Format itself is exciting. Font face is very exciting. But the thing that I got excited about was the adoption by the foundries. Yeah. So that here they've had this problem that is very not unlike what media companies have had, like music companies and stuff, where they have this, you know, thing they want to protect. And they have taken this like super mature stance on it, which is they are allowing distribution with very little DRM. Yep. Mostly, you know, the WAF format allows you basically to say where it came from, and that's essentially it. And yet, like, there's something like 47 of the major foundries have opted into that. And so I see sort of this maturity that we've gained by looking at the mistakes of the last 10 or 15 years.
Yep.
And that makes me really excited. I kind of feel like we're starting to refine what we're doing. And I kind of feel like that's going to propel us into this, like, you know, and also the collaboration that sort of comes with that makes me feel like it's a great time, you know, sort of see things evolving into like a mature version of what we've been trying to have, you know, for 10 or 15 years now.
No, I think it's a really key point, because I think some people, so you're looking at the half of the glass that's full, right? And the other half of the glass is, God damn it, we've done all this stuff before. Like, why can't we just use a plugin for that? Or why? It feels like we're reinventing the wheel, and at some level we are, because our first try, I felt, was we tried a lot of things. Some of them worked, some of them didn't work, but now they're all becoming a part of the native browser. And to me, that's just a positive. Like, if that's our baseline, like, I don't see anything bad.
There are things where you are, I mean, I think it's positive too, but there are, I do understand the frustration of say, a Flash developer or whatever that is like, maybe they've been, you know, I have a friend that worked for a long time at a company that did like a video conferencing thing. Use a Flash web-based thing. Their product could not be built today in HTML5. Yeah. And yet she's got a lot of people saying, you gotta get with the program, do HTML. I can't do it. It's not possible. So, you know, there are still places where we, you know, those plugins are required.
And that'll be forever, too.
Yeah, probably.
Like, you need plugins for the kind of the rapid innovation that you just can't do in a collaborative standards body.
And that's why I get so irritated with the either or. HTML5's it. No, plugins are it. Good Lord, people. It's either the right tool for the right job.
Right.
I mean, why do we have to fight? Why can't we just say, use HTML5 everywhere you can. It would be better. But there are some things you need a plugin for.
Yep.
Oh, well, that's what they're for.
Yep.
They can innovate faster.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, what makes me most excited today is not the cool stuff that's come out. It's not even I feel like we're in a better place than we were 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I get really excited about the fundamentals. And part of that's probably because I teach the fundamentals.
Yeah.
But there are still people who don't understand the fundamentals, who don't have a basic understanding of how to properly write something as simple as just basic markup.
Right.
And finding a way to get those people excited about putting a good foundation together so that they can then add those really exciting, cool technologies is something that gets me very excited, because I do still think there is a place in our industry and in education and in blogging and in writing and in conferences to talk about these fundamental topics, because I've seen it. I see the work. I get handed projects all the time. People are still writing bad markup, bad CSS, bad code, following bad practices. So I like the fundamentals. I'm excited that there's still an opportunity to talk about those amidst.
Well, there are new web developers starting every day who know nothing, and we can't really throw them into, look, here's CSS3 and HTML5. They still need to know, like, how do you build a solid foundation with these tools? and then make it sexy. You know?
But the flip side of that is that in some ways those people that are just starting off are in a much better place because they don't have a lot of the legacy stuff.
They didn't start with tables.
Right, exactly.
Totally. Well, you guys are so awesome. I wish we could. We got the 1 minute countdown thingy, so I guess we got to wrap this up. But yeah, we can continue this conversation back there. If people are at the conference watching this, we'll all be back here. Jeff, Stephanie, Robbie, Emily, and I'm Nishant, by the way. I forgot to introduce myself. Thank you guys for joining. Thanks for bringing your perspectives. Thanks for coming to Mix and speaking at Mix. Go download the IE 10 preview if you haven't already.